Hi, it's Bruce Belanoil here, and you're listening to a podcast where nostalgia comes alive. Yes, it's Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show. Roll it.
Welcome to Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, the podcast where nostalgia comes alive. Since July of 2021, Jake and his friends have interviewed professionals in the worlds of acting, directing, writing, puppeteering, and many more. Who will they be chatting with in this week's interview? Find out in this Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show episode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, where nostalgia comes alive. Have you here with us? Thank you for joining. As always, I'm your host, Jake Duffenbaugh. With me today, our co-host Chris Bixby and Matt Bingle. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Doing terrific. Hi, everybody. How are you, Jake?
Doing great, Matt. Thank you for asking. What do we have for today?
Fabulous that you are with us, folks. Our guest today is a puppeteer and voice actor who's worked with the Muppets and the Jim Henson Company since the early 1990s. He was a puppeteer on Crank Yankers as well as Stuff on Mutton Stuff, among others. He was also the puppeteer of Kyle O'Connor on The Puzzle Place. Now, this tape does not have this episode, sadly. Oh, well. As well as Goofer and Vinny in The Happy Time Murders. Most notably, he was the science kid on the show with the same name. And more recently, he was Evan the Troll on the Nickelodeon series The Barbarian and the Troll, which he was also one of the co-creators of. Please welcome Drew Massey. Drew, welcome. Happy to have you here.
Hello. How's it going? Jake, Matt, and Chris. Good morning.
Yes.
Hello. Hello.
You too.
Yes. Happy to have you here.
Happy to have you here.
So, good to be here.
Thank you. Very happy. So to kick this off, could you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. Let's see. I am from California originally. I spent some time back east while my parents went to different colleges. And I actually am an alumnus of MIT nursery school. It's really dorky, but it's true. I went to nursery school at MIT. Where the crayons talk back. And then I settled in Northern California, and that is kind of how I got into puppetry. Because Frank Oz, his family, I think, is from Northern California, and his dad worked at Children's Fairyland in Oakland, and that is how my friend Michael Earl got in touch with puppetry as well. I mean, I guess he was a fan of it to begin with, but he worked with Mike Osnowitz, and then so he got introduced to the puppet crowd back east, and it's really through him that I have a fantastic career in puppetry. I always knew I wanted to do something in entertainment because I was enthralled with, you know, all things Muppets and Star Wars and whatever growing up. Got all the Cinefix magazines and pored over how everything was done. And so I was a very behind the scenes kind of kid. And so I did a lot of puppet making when I was a kid. And part of that was due to Michael, because he taught an after school puppet making class when I was in the second grade. So I still have that vampire puppet that I made in the second grade. And it's weird that it was a vampire. It sort of set things off, because later I would play Count Blah on the Fox Greg the Bunny show, and then I would also do the puppet version of Angel in the Smile Time episode.
Nice.
So I have a nice history with vampire puppets. And I did right hand for Jerry Nelson doing the Count, actually, and I think I've right handed nice. For Matt a couple times. Anyway.
Nice.
Nice.
Awesome. What was your childhood like? And before you get home, take two. So what was your background like before getting into puppetry?
Well, before I really got into puppetry, I was studying to do, I really wanted to be a storyboard artist in Hollywood. So I went to industrial design school, because a lot of my favorite storyboard artists, notably like Joe Johnson, get the big books of all the behind the scenes Star Wars storyboards and stuff, and all of them had been through industrial design school, so they knew how to draw really cool vehicles and just draw well and put their ideas on paper. And I figured at the very least you know, if I got an education in that, hopefully I would learn to storyboard, and if not, you know, maybe I could do a graphic novel or something, or get into comics, because I would, you know, I really wanted to master the sequential arts, as it were. So, but industrial, yeah. So I went to Cal State Long Beach, and I guess at that time they were running the Jim Henson Hour, and I got really inspired. So I just started making puppets kind of for the first time since I was a kid. And I'd just like filled my dorm room with puppet heads, which probably my fellow students thought was weird, but I didn't care. I mean, it was college. Everybody was a weirdo in college, right? So
yeah.
pretty much. And so it was because of that Michael Earl and I got in contact later on, because he ran into my mom in a supermarket in our hometown, and then he's like, "What's Drew doing?" She's like, "Well, I think he just built a bunch of puppets, so he's kind of into that now." And he's like, "Oh, well, cool. Then have him visit next time he's up." So I did. Like, I brought a bunch of my puppet heads up, and he's like, "Oh, these are cool. Do you want to learn how to puppeteer?" I was like, "Yes, I do." From a guy who's been working with the Muppets for years, yes, that sounds great. So I went over to his house, and he set up a camera. I think he already had a camera and monitor set up. And that's really how you learn good classic Henson style puppetry, is with a camera and a monitor. There's really kind of no other way to do it.
Right.
And that was my very first lesson in video puppetry. And it was super fun. And the way Michael told it, it was like a ridiculous matter of timing and being in the right place at the right time. Because as I was packing my puppet heads in the trunk of my car, Kevin Clash, who did Elmo and Fiery and Labyrinth and all kinds of wonderful guys, Splinter in the original Ninja Turtles movies. Anyway, so Kevin Clash calls at that exact moment. And asks Michael if he wants to do a job in New York for a home video. And he says, "So do you have anybody in mind to, you know, assist for you?" And he's like, looking at me out the window, he's like, "Yeah, I know a guy." So that was kind of it. Like, he said, "Do you want to come out to New York and do this job? You know, it'll pay enough to cover your airfare." And I'm like, "Yes." So I went out, and it was like a magical mystery tour of puppet awesomeness. Like, I remember it was over Halloween, so I had made this like fun Audrey 2 style chest burster kind of puppet thing, where I'd strap my arm into the middle of my body and then puppeteer this character coming out, which is really fun. So I took that, and that was a good idea, because it, you know, got people wondering, like, "Who's this kid? This is kind of neat." So if you ever have the opportunity, show off your skills. That's what I'm saying. But it was amazing, because he took me out there. We went to Sesame Street. Jim Henson was still alive at the time. He was doing Kermit on the street. So we watched him for a little bit. And then when he was done, Michael ushered me over. He's like, "Jim, meet my friend Drew." I was like, "Hi." I'm shaking Kermit's head. That's neat. I mean, your hand. I mean, yeah, hi. It's nice to meet you. And that was, it was really cool. And then we had lunch with Richard Hunt, who was still alive at the time. Yeah, super nice guy, super funny. So that was kind of an amazing job. And the job itself was fantastic. Worked with Kevin, who was lovely, showed me off. I mean, he was really patient with, you know, everything I was trying to do. And I was just starting out, you know, so I was figuring the monitors out. And I think they could see I had potential, but, you know, I was very green. So I really owe a lot to them too, that they, you know, were just like, "You'll be fine. You're going to do great. Just do it. It's great." So it was nice. Sometimes it just takes people believing in you.
Of course.
Make an entire career happen.
Pretty much.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep, pretty much. So very early on in your professional career, you puppeteered on the Henson series Dinosaurs. Now we're talking like very technologically advanced, especially for the early 90s. What was it like working on that?
That was, to this day, one of the coolest experiences, because you would walk on set and you were literally immersed in that world, because the stage, it was at CBS Radford, and it was on stage 10, one of their bigger stages, and it was like always set up with the Sinclair family house and like jungles and volcanoes, and it was always smoked up. Like there was stage smoke, so you walk in and it just feels like, you know, prehistory. And then people in giant dinosaur suits go walking around. It was so great because it was, I think, one of the last things that was kind of all in camera. Like everything you saw on that show was real and it was happening in front of you. And the level of technical expertise and patience and know-how to make it, to pull it all off, was just mind-blowing. Even back then, like, I don't know what the Disney execs, I hope they were thrilled when they saw the footage, and it was being shot on film, so it was being shot like a feature. They were not screwing around on that show. It was phenomenal. And yeah, it was, having said that, like, it was so impressive and so much fun to be on the set. They invited me on the set because I had been, really, some of my formative training, honestly, was for that show. They had an audition where it was was it a month long? It felt like a month. It was probably only 2 weeks, but they brought us in and they basically ran us through our paces. For me, they taught me like everything. It was Kevin Clash, it was David Greenaway, it was Brian Henson. Dave Greenaway was there to teach they had the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle heads, so they were teaching the digital performance systems, because so they had their Waldo out there that moved. It was like, it was for Dinosaurs, but it was before they had done Dinosaurs, so it was, you know, comparatively like pretty rudimentary. But it was still amazing to get to put my hand in that and control a physical mechanical puppet. But so anyway, they brought us in there, they trained us, they actually paid us for our time. I was like, what world is this? How, what? It was insane. So at the end of that, they're like, we love what you did. You're still very green. I'm like, I know, but I love this and I love you guys and I want to do this for the rest of my life. And they're like, awesome. Come to set anytime you want and learn as much as you can. I was there like every day, like every second I could be there, I was there. People thought I worked on the show. Like to this day, they're like, wait, you only actually like worked 2 days? I was like, yeah, yeah. I only puppeteered 2 days, but the rest of the time I was watching, I was learning, because I was there was industrial design, and then I was also in film school. So I was taking film classes because I wanted to learn how to do film as well. Well, what better way to learn the craft than hang out with, you know, professional directors on this fantastic multi-millions dollar TV show. So anyway, all my answers are very long-winded, but that was my experience. And then a couple times I got roped in to scenes doing creatures, background creatures, fridge monsters, and I couldn't have been happier.
Nice. So you also worked on the PBS series The Puzzle Place, performing the character Kyle. What was performing that character like?
Yeah, that was really fun. I started out on that show as an assist, so I did arms and hands for tons of other characters. I did a scene that I'm really proud of. It was with Noel McNeil, with his character, and he was singing a song, and there there during the song, he had to look into the camera with a mirror. I was in charge of the mirror. Then he put the mirror down because it was a separate prop, if I'm remembering it correctly. And then he went and he picked up a crayon and doodled a little thing and then put the crayon back down. I think I'm remembering this right. Anyway, I was like really young and real cocky. I was like, guys, this is gonna be fine. I nailed the mirror part. And then I was like, if I squish the armature in the puppet's hand just so, I think there's enough tension that I can just like slide it onto the crayon, pick it up. And it worked. I don't know why, it shouldn't have. But my puppet guardian angels were looking out for me that day. But that was really fun. So anyway, I started out as an assist, and that was a job that, because Kevin Clash did the design for the characters on that, he
right.
got me into that. So he was a good dude to know. And playing Kyle was really an honor. It was pretty cool because they did not have, many. I mean, it was a pretty diverse show, but having that level of diversity represented was pretty awesome. And it was, it was cool. They had a whole rig just to make it look like he was in his wheelchair. The wheelchair obviously has to be suspended 6 feet up in the air. So that was a little tough, but yeah, made it work. It's fun.
Wonderful. So throughout your career, you had the pleasure of working with the Muppets for a number of projects. How did you begin working for them?
Well, that all came initially through my association with Dinosaurs and really that big training workshop, because I had met a bunch of I'd met Brian Henson. So at that time, the Henson family was still owned the Muppets. So so I went out what was I doing? I was doing Cousin Skeeter at the time. And then between seasons of that, I went out and did Muppets from Space.
Yes.
And that was my
love Muppets from Space. It's so great.
It was so much fun to make. It was really cool. There are a couple of shots in there that I don't know if they're really appreciated with the level of technical wizardry that it took to make them happen. There's one during the brick house sequence. There's one thing where one shot where Kermit comes down a staircase, and that rig was amazing. They literally built I don't know if anybody else has talked about this, but they literally built roller coaster rails for this little slidey cart that Steve Whitmire sat on at the top of the stairs, right? And so there was a banister that was solid. So the camera saw the staircase. So you saw the stairs and you saw Kermit come on top. There's nothing underneath. So it's Steve and Kermit and he's on this little slidey thing. And you saw the stairs, and then the camera kind of dollies to the left so that the banister blocks the stairs, but you've already seen them, right? Well, at that point, stagehands pull this giant lever to retract all of the stair treads to reveal the track for the roller coaster thing that Steve then was lowered down on. So it looks like Kermit's just walking down the stairs. It was so cool. There's a bunch of stuff like that that was really, really fun. And I realized the late, great Ray Liotta was a comedic genius. That guy was so funny. He had us in stitches. I don't know. I've never seen anything like it. Very funny man.
Yeah, so one of your earlier projects with the Muppets was on Muppet Classic Theater. What was that like?
Yeah, that was great. I think that was the one. I think that was the one where Frank destroyed a monitor. I think that was.
Oh
that was
boy,
that was a great. What was funny? What was funny was Frank. The whole day had been like
All right, nobody put anything on this monitor. It's very expensive. Don't mess with it.
Right? So we're like, okay, hey, right, so, okay, don't. Okay. Well, later in the day, at some point, somebody had set something on it. And it's built. And the liquid went in, and it was an old CRT monitor, and it just went smoke. And it just was that classic, like, monitor fail. And Frank's like,
who?
And then some really, like, shy PA was like, I'm sorry. I actually saw you set that coffee down there earlier today.
What? That was me? I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I don't believe I did that.
Anyway, that is my most vivid memory of the Classics Theater. That and doing, I think that was the same one where we did the three Elvises.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
With, and that, oh my gosh, that was so much fun. That was with Bill, and I was assisting Bill. And my gosh, we were just hamming it up. It was fun. Bill's always fun to work with.
Oh yeah,
I love Bill. He's the best.
Bill, he's wonderful.
Yeah. Awesome.
Funny, funny man.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So, what was it like working on Muppets Tonight?
That was amazing. Oh my gosh. Again, like that was when Jerry was still around and Frank. I right-handed for Frank doing a Fozzie number where he was running around everywhere and you had to keep up with Frank. Like, you know, just if you didn't keep up, you're out. So I'm running around. And the problem was at that point, I don't know whose choice this was, I guess to save money, they didn't have wireless microphones. There was a veritable spaghetti plate of multicolored wires on the floor at all times. So treacherous, especially when you're trying to look at a monitor and some people are on like platform shoes because they're too short. I mean, it's a miracle the medics weren't there like every second. But you know, one of my very vivid memories of Muppets Tonight was right-handing for Frank, doing Fozzie, and praying I didn't trip, because it was just full of minefields. It was just nuts. And he went fast. Like, Frank, you know, when Fozzie runs through the frame, he runs through the frame. Like, it's not slow. but it was amazing. I mean, there was so much like star talent, so it was really cool, like watching like Pierce Brosnan rehearse his fire eating act and almost lighting his face on fire, and he was still James Bond at the time. I was like, oh my god, this Pierce Brosnan almost set James Bond's face on fire. That's crazy. He was a bit of a daredevil, but super nice guy. Yeah, everybody was really, really cool. Yeah, that was fun. And then so many fun characters came out of that. You know, I'd love to see Batman. I'd love to see more Johnny and Sal. And
yes.
I mean, I loved all the Bill and Brian's pairings. You know, Seymour and Pepe, and it was just fun stuff. Yeah, and I mean, Pepe came out of that show.
Yeah. So, and now he's such, you know, this iconic character. Yep. He's been like the lead in a lot of things. Like, there was Muppets Haunted Mansion fairly recently, which Pepe was a huge part of. So,
yeah, definitely. Yeah. So, that was really fun. And then there were fun little things that happened, like well, you know, watching some of the stars rehearse was really, really fun. Like, who am I thinking? Oh, well, Prince. I mean, Prince came on.
Oh, and, yes.
And just like watching him do his numbers before actually going on the, like, he would just rehearse, and we were so like, wow, it's a private concert. This is so cool. Yeah, I mean, there were just so many great opportunities during that show. to watch and learn, and it was pretty magical. I wish somebody was. Is anybody airing that show? Where is it?
I don't think so. I think all the episodes might be on YouTube or something. I don't think it's aired anywhere in years.
No.
Hope it will soon.
So. Yeah. Like maybe, who knows? Maybe one day it'll go on Disney Plus or something.
Hopefully.
We'll see.
Yes.
Yeah.
They keep taking stuff off. R.I.P. Earth to Ned. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, going back a bit to working on Muppet films, because we already talked about Muppets from Space. What was it like working on It's a Very Merry Muppet Christmas Movie?
Oh, that was great. That was fun because it was directed by Kirk Thatcher, and he's always fun to work with. And then he was a writer on Muppets from Space, so that's where we first like really started palling around, and then so by the time the Christmas movie came around, we were pretty tight. So we had a lot of fun shenanigans in Vancouver, and that was my first time shooting in Vancouver, and I love that city. Nice. So much fun. The crews are amazing, and. Yeah, it was, let's see, what was notable about that shoot? I mean, Joan Cusack was phenomenal. She was really fun to work with. And it was just a good time. I don't know that I remember anything super specific, but it's fun to make.
Absolutely, very, very fun movie.
Yes, it was. So you also puppeteered on the web series Statler Waldorf from the Balcony as Statler, Animal Pepe, and various others. What was that like?
Well, that was really interesting because that was when the whole franchise was just starting to. I mean, I think had they been sold to Disney at that point.
I think so.
They might have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe like
I was
a year
actually,
after. I think.
I was actually a little irritated that they ran my Pepe stuff because that was supposed to have been dubbed over by Bill. So that was a little frustrating, but you know, the rest of it, the Statler was doing Statler was really fun. I liked that. And the idea with that was really wanted to create more new Muppet characters. Because, you know, I'm doing the old characters, like they have people to do those. So I'm really more interested in doing new characters. So, but, you know, obviously they wanted the other ones and Debbie McClellan was in charge of that. So she was calling the shots and figuring out where to put us. But yeah, they actually wanted me to do Kermit for that. And I was like, nah, you already have a guy.
Right.
So, no. But, yeah.
So, you briefly got to work on Sesame Street versus the special Amapalooza. Can you talk a bit about getting to work on that?
I remember very little of that. That was a while ago. I think I remember more about my... like individual times assisting for Kevin, like when he was out here doing, you know, appearances at the Grove, television appearances here and there. Because a lot of that, like Amapalooza, it was very, like the production was very divided. So I wasn't there for the main part of it. So whatever I did on Amapalooza, it was like insert bits.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Cause I know there are a lot of songs, done in well a few songs done in LA, like there was one with The Count, there was a one with
yes.
like En Vogue or whatever.
Yes, I do remember that. Yeah, the En Vogue one I did take part in. Yeah, so I think that's probably where I first assisted. I don't know if I first assisted Jerry with The Count, but that was definitely one of the more memorable ones. Yeah.
Definitely. And so kind of moving on a bit from Sesame and the Muppets, you've also done a lot of work with Jim Henson's Creature Shop. Can you kind of talk about your work with them?
Yeah, well, it all, again, stemmed from that Dinosaurs training workshop, and so I knew people at the shop from that point on, and so I auditioned to do the Flintstones movie. That okay. was my first big mm. job with the Creature Shop for Henson for films. So that was really fun. I spent a summer with my hand up a bird, moving him around, and then I had this sort of like steady cam rig to fly him around. So that was really fun. And I was removed from a lot of shots. I think people at ILM got sick of seeing me. yeah, so then after that, I just kind of kept with it, and I always loved the digital performance system, which I'm now training to I'm training other puppeteers to learn that. So
because we need
awesome. More people to do it, and we got a really nice diverse swath of great puppeteers who can improvise, do great voices, and who are really good at manipulation. So it's yeah, it's good. I'm trying to deepen the bench there, and it's going well. People nice. Are really taking to it. So but yeah, so let's see, I went did that, and then I did Dr. Doolittle also for the Creature Shop. they rented their tiger to Wes Anderson for the Darjeeling limited movie. So I spent 5 days in India with a tiger puppet on a train going through Rajasthan, which was absolutely phenomenal. I've never gotten a bigger, quicker set of vaccination shots.
mm.
Had to get like malaria shots and all this. But yeah, that was amazing. If you ever get a chance to go to India, do it. It's amazing. And then I'm still, you know, working for him today, doing a lot of HTPS stuff, and yeah, I'm on call basically whenever they need me.
Very cool, very cool. So you also worked on the Nickelodeon series Cousin Skeeter, doing the puppetry for the title character.
Yes.
Not the voice people, that was somebody else. Just wanted to state yes. that.
That was Bill Bellamy. I know, it's so funny because I talk about that all the time. I'm like, that was a different era. But I'll tell you, though, the thing is, though, Kevin Clash gave me that job. He literally, he said, do this. I don't have anybody else do it. I'm like, okay. Is anybody gonna, okay. I mean, you back me up, right? Like, if anybody has an issue, like yeah. So, but he was great, and he designed the puppet, and it was through his puppet company, and so that was really cool because it was through Tolan Robbins production. So I got to know Brian Robbins and Mike Tolan, and that was a fantastic, like, talk about a film school. I mean, they had some fantastic directors who, a lot of them came out of Roger Corman films, actually. So they knew how to shoot quick and really get what you wanted in the shortest time. But we had some fantastic directors there. Allison Liddy, Sean Levy, who went on to direct all the Night at the Museum movies and Stranger Things, right? He was on Cousin Skeeter back in the day.
Nice.
Yeah, Lev Spiro. Yeah, lots of fantastic directors. So that was really, really cool because it was a single camera sitcom. And so I really got a lot of director knowledge from that, because I'd ask them, you know, and I'd harass the DP. It's like, so why this lens? Why, what are you doing here? And it was great. Because, you know, if you're on a production like that, you know, and it's you have the time, people answer your questions. So it's a really, really good way to learn on the job. And if you, you know, sit and observe. And the great thing, one of the many great things about puppetry is that as an actor, you're always seeing the frame. So I think that's why a lot of puppeteers go into directing, because they are used to seeing exactly how the shots are set up. They know exactly what's being shot, where the camera's moving, why. And then if they, you know, if you study it after the fact, you'll see how it's all cut together. And it's really informative, but it's cool, because as a puppeteer, you're always, you always know what's going in the camera.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you also puppeteered Count Blah and various others on the sitcom Greg the Bunny. What was that like?
That was so much fun.
Very funny show.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. I'm bummed it didn't go another season, at least. But gosh, yeah, talk about star power. I always wanted to run into Marilyn Henner again, because I hear she has an eidetic memory. So I'm wondering if I'm sure she will. She'll be like, Drew, how's it going? I don't know. It'd just be really fun. Because she played Count Blah's ex-wife, I guess, or something. No, Warren's. Anyway, lots of weird relationship things going on in that show. But yeah, super fun. Seth Green, Sarah Silverman, Gene Levy. Like, why? How do you top that? It's phenomenal. Yeah, and the only thing I wish they had done is get better puppet builders. I think I don't know what they were doing there, because some of those puppets were very uncomfortable and not made well. But you know,
it is what it is.
You spend your money on the, you know, the expensive people, and
yeah,
sometimes they, but to this day, like, you know, Dan Milano and I talk a bunch, because he's just the greatest guy and such a wonderful person and a good friend and a fantastic guy. He's such a good improviser. One of my favorite times in all of puppetry is watching Dan Milano as Warren the Ape riff and just ad lib with Dr. Drew Pinsky in a real rehab center about all of Warren's issues. It was hilarious. I mean, clearly Dan had thought out this character to such a degree that that an actual licensed therapist could give him real advice. It was pretty phenomenal.
Definitely love Greg the Bunny.
Yeah.
Yes, fantastic show. Another fantastic show you worked on, various puppets on the Comedy Central series Crank Yankers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Fun show. What's it like working on that?
Super fun. Behind the scenes is really odd compared to most shows, because it's done to a pre-recorded track. So a lot of times you'll be rehearsing and actually even shooting your scene, right? But because it's to a pre-recorded track, people are tearing down and building sets over here. So it's just like, you're doing your thing and you're like, guys, I'm working. Hey, we got to shoot. We got to tear this down and build it, because you're shooting on it in like 20 minutes. So it was nuts. But and for me personally, like, not the most satisfying experience, just because, like, puppeteers, we love doing our own voices. Like, dubbing later is fine, you know, if we get to lay down a performance to have it dubbed later, that's fine. At least you have the freedom to improvise and play around with a lot of stuff. This, you were really locked into the track, and it was super, super tough, especially the first several seasons, because you would just have to memorize the call. There was no other way to do it. And you had to memorize the length of every pause and every... Now, in later seasons, what was great, the total innovation that actually made it fun, last two seasons, they had beeps. I didn't work on the last season, but the season, I hope they still did beeps. But anyway, they had cue beeps in front of when you were gonna talk, which made it infinitely more simple to actually nail your lip sync. So, and then, you know, and then for me, like a lot of it was freed up. I mean, you still had to memorize the basic call, but a lot of it was freed up to actually concentrate on the performance instead of like, when's it coming up? So there's a lot of panic on that show.
Yeah, so
but going... super fun. I gotta say though, just shout out to John Kimmel. I love that guy. He just made that show fun to be on. And Jen Gore, producer. She's amazing. Actually, you know what? It was filled with fantastic people. We used Gary Gordon and Charles Papert for design and DP respectively on our
nice.
Sizzle pilot for Barbarian and the Troll. So yeah, and Jen Gore. It's just full of great people.
So going back a bit to using the Henson Digital Performance System, you also performed Sid on Sid the Science Kid.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like working on that show and kind of, you know, really getting to work with digital puppetry on a project like that?
Yeah, that was pretty groundbreaking for its time. They were, I remember, you know, it was this little, I guess, just PBS kids preschool show. But the technical, Henson's always really pushing the envelope technically. So it's, so they wanted to make it like a real time three camera. And you can, the system now is so robust, like they have their camera rigs and you can do a three camera sitcom. Actually in camera now because Unreal 5 is so good. And so back then, like, you know, we were shooting and we would do, I mean, we'd do pages a day. It was pretty phenomenal how much content we would push out. Back then it took more post-rendering than it does now. So now it's even quicker. But back then it was funny because, you know, I'd be walking out the door going home and people would be just wheeling in these giant dollies full of like servers. They're like, more computing power. It's like, because they rendered it all there on site. They built a server farm or a render farm. And so it was very technically demanding. But super fun to shoot. Like one of the great things about digital puppetry is like you get everybody on set and you block out your scene. And it's like a regular acting gig where, you know, you really go through the beats of the script and you find those little moments and you get fun little improv bits, which, you know, you can, I don't know that many animated shows get that because it's very spontaneous. So, and you get little things, you know, if somebody trips, well, you keep it in, it's natural.
yes, it's a science kid, it's such a wonderful show. There's so many great episodes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, gosh. I it's funny because I my dad's a retired nuclear physicist, and so I really, you know, I grew up in a science family, so I after the fact, yeah, I'm like really proud of the show because I feel like it really did what it set out to do,
yeah,
which is teach science mm-hmm. readiness and you yeah know.
Went on for and quite a while too.
Yeah
it did. We went for a while until like a couple 5 years
or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think they just kept running because we did a lot of episodes for that.
Yeah.
So,
like over 100 or no,
probably
yeah,
around 60, there.
Probably around there. Like
it was nine. I think it was nine around 90, something like that. But yeah. It was really really fun, and I love working with all, like, the suit performers were fantastic, the puppeteer mm-hmm. cast yeah. was fantastic. Like it was yeah.
Yeah, and like here's Alice Deneen, Donna Kimball, a lot of wonderful people.
Victor Yared.
Victor, yes.
Yeah, and Julian Busher and the super performers Misty Rosas and John Cameron and Alan Williams and who else? Who am I forgetting?
So many.
Sorry. I know I keep saying like, oh, it was great. It was so much fun, but it really, like, you know, My girlfriend Nicolette and I are always saying, like, we're in the greatest community of performers. Like, they're just such really nice people. And we always feel very, very fortunate.
Yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely. It was actually only like 67 episodes.
I thought it was more than that. Really?
I think that was one season.
I know you guys also did two seasons. Sid the Science Kid the movie.
Yeah.
Which was a lot of fun.
That was fun. It was cool to hear Christopher Lloyd's voice on it too after the fact. Doc Brown. I was like, what? Yes. You're giving Doc Brown be the professor? That's so cool.
Yeah. And you actually also did the voiceover for The Funding too.
The little PBS, like,
yeah,
yeah, okay, please, yeah. Donate, this is sponsored by Lockheed or whatever.
Yeah.
Five California.
So, definitely. So a lot of Sid the Science Kid fans are probably wondering, is it fine if we can hear a little bit of Sid?
Yeah, sure. Is this thing on? Hello. Keep asking questions, but don't stop till you get good answers.
That's great.
I'm like amending his catchphrase because I'm like, don't just ask questions. We've had too much of that.
Right. Yeah.
Don't just cast doubt on everything because that doesn't do any good.
No.
That's great.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, there are lots of great episodes. Sticker Chart, Slide to the Side.
Oh, yeah, Sticker Chart. That was the very first one.
Oh, Sticker Chart, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. Sid's Backyard Campout, which is so funny. We really mentioned that when talking with Victor. Yeah, Victor, he's great. And he was thinking that same exact episode, too.
Yeah.
And, out of all of them, that particular one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My chair is failing me. There we go.
The No School sing along.
I was just gonna bring that one up. Yes.
Yeah, it's a good one.
That was a fun one to watch.
I love that one. I did watch it before for doing this, and it was such a fun episode to watch it again. It was great. Very
good. It's a great show. We need to bring that back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Especially now with current technology. Can you imagine? Wow.
Oh yeah.
Right. Yes.
Exactly. So on stage, you perform in the puppet improv troupe Puppet Up, Uncensored. Yes. What was that like?
Oh boy, we started that back in 2006, I think, was our first show. And it was a friends and family show on the Henson lot. And boy, we were rough. But it was, it's so much fun. We got invited to the Aspen Comedy Festival and then a couple festivals in Australia. And then Edinburgh at the Fringe Festival. So it was great. We sort of traveled the world with that. And I love doing the show so much. I always try to come up with bits and new song improvs, and everybody just kind of collaborates and adds to it. And it's it's neat. I wish At some point, I would love for it. It's a great live experience. I would love for it to be televised somehow. I don't know how you do that quite, but if you could do a, whose puppet is it anyway kind of thing, it'd be great.
Oh, that sounds like a fun idea.
Yeah. 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 So you also got to puppeteer on a few Sid and Marty Croft projects, including Mutton Stuff and the revival of Sigmund and the Sea Monsters. And of course, we very sadly recently lost Marty Croft. Yes. What was it like getting to work with them on those projects?
So much fun, an absolute dream come true. There was a certain point at which, I was doing Henson projects and Croft projects, and I was like, oh man, if my 10-year-old self could see me now, he would just freak the heck out. Marty was lovely. He was such a great guy, and he was always very, very nice to me. And he really, when he gets people he likes. He kind of adopts them, you know. He's like, your family, just come back, whatever you got, we'll take a lunch and shoot the crap and bad ideas around. And then, you know, he'd call me for advice on different things here and there. And so I was really sad that we lost him, because yeah. I had hoped he would be around for much, as we all did, much yeah. longer. But yeah, working for him was fantastic. I love doing Mutton Stuff.
Again, Mutton Stuff, such a great show.
Such a great love show. It. Again, it's like a family. And it was really great, because at Marty's funeral, it was a bit of a reunion. There were a lot of Mutton Stuff people there, and which was awesome. And I gotta say, like, to this day, Stuff is one of my favorite characters I've ever played, because I think he's the dumbest. Yeah, and I just love him so much. Like, I could do anything and just, you know, mishear people, and it was actually really fun to do on set. God bless her. Megan Godfrey deserves a huge shout out. She was in Stuff's suit, and she's a stunt woman, and just I don't know how she did half the things she did in that costume. It's like literally wearing a sofa. Like, it's huge. Like, there's no other way to build it lighter, because he's covered with fur, and fur is heavy. And so, yeah. You know, she's literally like jumping up. And I swear, like, at a certain point, you know, in video games, when characters like jump up in their, or cartoons, they jump up and their feet do this. Like, she used to do that on the regular, and I'm like, what? How are you doing that? Honestly, it had like boundless energy, and she is such a gifted physical comedian. She was so good in that suit. So she really deserves credit for a lot of Stuff's personality. Yes. And between the two of us, like, had great I really felt like I had great chemistry, and I felt like the character itself was just awesome, and a fantastic foil for Calvin.
Yes, Calvin did such a great job.
Calvin was wonderful on that show.
Yeah, yes, he really was.
He really did.
Such a good, especially like, guys, for his first acting job. Like, come on, he was a kid.
He was. Yeah, anybody. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, he did really. Around that, you know, I mean, he was.
I'm pretty sure him and I might be around the same age or something.
Yeah,
I mean, I am too.
yeah,
you know, previously, before he did Mutton Stuff, before he even thought about doing a show like Mutton Stuff, he was a part of some of his dad's shows too.
Yeah,
so he wasn't really like much like into acting. He was kind of like a little cameo, but that was Mutton Stuff is kind of like his first ever like acting gig.
Major role.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is crazy. He did really that good, but with not any acting at all. He just, you know.
Yeah, and even like the fact that show happened at all. I'm fond of saying, like, you know, they always tell you in Hollywood, like, all right, don't have kids, don't have animals, and don't have puppets. That's just a recipe for disaster. Like, this had all three, every show, and it went off, you know, without a hitch every day, which is a real testament. Like, hire those producers to do everything, because wow. Croft got it done.
Yes. Cool. Doesn't look like we're moving out to Hollywood there, Jake, huh? Nope. Mm-mm, that's fine. East Coast is just fine with us.
Yes.
Absolutely. So is it fine if we can hear a little bit of Stuff?
Oh, sure. Hey, Calvin, guess what? never mind, I forgot what I was going to say. Ooh, Bone!
That's wonderful.
He's my favorite.
Yes.
That's great. Hot Stuff. He's a great character. So now, moving on to more of your recent work, what was it like getting to perform with the Muppets at the Hollywood Bowl and the O2?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'll tell you something, like, you have never been love bombed by an audience. if like being on stage, just the curtains opened and like, wah! Like it was nuts, but so much fun. Yeah, it was great. You know, I was assisting all the main guys, and I was doing, I don't know if you were there, but Kermit did a little tap dance number, and I was doing his little tappy feet, and Alice was doing his little arms. And
yeah, for the Happy Feet song, yeah.
We set up a whole rig in my living room at the time with bungees, and like, it was fun. We rehearsed the heck out of that. That was a great show. I thought it was really well written. I thought it was super well produced. I wish they could have, you know, kept doing it, because it was great. But I'm sure it was prohibitively expensive to put on, but
probably
super
yeah.
good for
I'm sure.
Yeah, super good for PR. Mm-hmm. Anything that gets the Muppets out there.
Absolutely.
Yes, there are lots of videos of those shows on YouTube, and every time you watch shows, it's just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Just so wonderful, especially the Rainbow Connection performance. Mm-hmm. Every single show, all they how could tell you in the rest of Puppeteers is trying to so hard not to get emotional when all of you go up together. It's so incredible.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We'll be backstage.
Yeah.
Hold it together.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's too beautiful.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's tough. So your most recent project with them was on the Disney Plus series, the Emmy Award-winning Muppets Mayhem.
Yes.
Yes. So sad it got canceled.
I know.
Season two, baby. Yeah, season two, baby. Yeah.
I know, when they set it up perfectly for another season, and still like, what?
Right? It was a perfect setup.
Come on.
Yeah.
Adam Goldberg, what more do you need?
Such the idea. We were watching it with some friends of ours, and we even said like, this is a perfect setup for a second season, but now it'll never happen, unfortunately. But it really was a perfect setup. If you haven't seen Muppets Mayhem, go watch it. What was working on that like?
Well, for me, I wasn't on most of it. I did 4 of the 6 band members in the opening credits. So that was my big addition to, like, I did Floyd and Janice and Animal and Zoot, I think, in the opening credits. And then Nicolette Santino was assisting me on that. And then who else was on that day? I don't know. Anyway, was Misha there? Misha might have been there. Let's assume he was. anyway, so it's, so my experience on set is very limited. I did a day of reshoots as well at the end. So, but aside from that, assuming it was fun, it looked like it was fun.
From our observance, it looked like it was fun. We'll just go with that.
It really was.
Certainly a wonderful show. And the album is wonderful too. Muppets Mayhem album. Really, it's
yeah,
such
I mean,
a,
getting
such
like
wonderful show.
Ringo Starr to play the drums on a song, like,
oh yeah,
it's crazy.
Oh yeah, they got so many amazing cameos on that. I know.
Yeah, Weird Al Yankovic.
Yes,
I was so happy to. I met Weird Al at the premiere party, and that was.
That's great.
I was like, Bill, could Nikki and I want to meet Weird Al. Could you play Wingman? Could you just like introduce us? I was like, sure. I'll go start a conversation, and then you just kind of like wander up. he's so great. Bill. Thanks,
love Bill. Yeah.
Yes, love Bill. So, moving back a little bit, recently, a couple years back, you co-created the Nickelodeon series The Barbarian and the Troll, puppeteering one of the lead characters, Evan. Again, very sad that only got one season. I will say, I watched that show every week when it was on, like a new episode.
Oh,
it's one of the few shows over the last decade that's happened to me, but
yeah.
That's how amazing of a show it was. It really was such an amazing show.
Thank you.
Could you kind of talk about the creation process of what that show was like?
Yeah, absolutely. Mike Mitchell, who I co-created it with, I just saw him last week. He's doing Kung Fu Panda 4, so go see it opening weekend.
Plug
for Mike's new movie. Nice. Yeah, so he and I met, early 90s on a show that he had created with a guy named Chris Cole for ABC called Chunks of Life. And it was this hilarious three slacker dudes in an apartment 90s grunge era sitcom, all with puppets. And he'd come from CalArts and was he's very in the animation realm, but loves puppets. And so we've kind of like worked together on and off for years and years. He directed the pilot for Greg the Bunny. And then I don't know, we kept in contact, and then at one point we were just like, let's make a show, let's have lunch. I think he said, come to lunch, I have a couple ideas, let's do a thing. And I'm like, great, awesome. So he had two ideas, and one was about a female warrior, and I was like, awesome, it needs a troll who's bad at trolling. he's like, cool. And then that was pretty much it. And then so I think he wrote a bunch of script and forwarded it to me, and I wrote a bunch, and we just sort of kept ping-ponging it back and forth, and we cobbled together this really way, way too long pilot episode. But it was funny and good, and we loved it, and we're like, we gotta go pitch this. And so he did a bunch of character designs, and I did some character designs, and we went out with it and pitched it, and we got some hits like right off. And we went with Nickelodeon because they said, like, number one, they were really quick to bite, and they're like, yes, we want to do this, and we'll do it ourselves. We're not going to sell it to anybody else. We're going to produce it, put it on our own network. And so that was a big factor for us in choosing Nickelodeon, because even though the show is kind of do you remember, it's before your time, there was a time when certain cartoons would run on Nickelodeon and then they would run on MTV, and they got a whole different audience on MTV. And right, we were kind of hoping that would happen, like the Ren and Stimpy route, right? Like, yeah. If Ren and Stimpy had just run on Nickelodeon, nobody would, you know, whatever. But the college kids saw it, and it blew up. Now, if that had happened to Barbarian and the Troll, like, that would have been cool. They had run it, like, you know, I mean, now MTV is not, it's a shell of its former self. But if that had happened, the show might have gotten more traction. I don't know, because we wrote it really like old school Sesame Street style, where like, this is for kids ish we really want the parents to dig it,
right? So yeah,
we kind of wrote it for us, and we kind of wrote it for the college kids who might be watching. I don't know why they would, but anyway, so that was kind of our focus, and so much fun to do, so much hard work. By the way, it's because I mentioned that I love Vancouver when I went to do Very Merry Muppet Christmas. I recommended Vancouver when they said, like, we have to go. We shot our sizzle here in Los Angeles, and then Nickelodeon was adamant. They're like, we cannot shoot here. It is too expensive. The show will never get made. So we're going to Atlanta. And at that point, it was 2020. And I'm like, have you seen Atlanta's COVID rates? Have you considered Vancouver? They're like, but we will. So we pushed hard for Vancouver. And that's where we shot, which was awesome, because they have amazing outdoor areas to shoot in. Now, we wanted to shoot more in the outdoors. Turns out, that's insanely expensive, because you got to truck your entire crew out there, and all the support for the crew, which means porta potties and catering and craft service and all the stuff. Humans need a lot. So you gotta, you know, pay for all that when you move out to the woods. But we did get several days out in the real wilderness, and we thought, like, it's just so cinematic, so great. I learned a lot from doing the Angel episode, Smile Time. Like, when you put puppets on camera with, like, really professional lenses and make it look cinematic and beautiful, it's like, it's a whole different puppet experience. So that's really what we tried to do. And they built, to save money, they built an entire forest on a soundstage for us. So most of the time you see all the characters waltzing through a forest, most of that is indoors with some spectacular lighting. And they spent like a month hammering together trees from parts of other trees. They literally built a forest. It was amazing to watch. But yeah, Mike and I were involved in so much and all the production, like character design and casting and picking. I mean, they had casting directors, but, you know, we suggested the puppeteers we liked. And that whole series was done with 8 puppeteers. That's it. That's all we got. 8 people. Oh, wow. I waltzed them onto set and I said, "You see this, land of Gothmoria? You're it. You are every living, breathing thing in the entire kingdom. So buckle up. It's going to be insane." And this was at the height of COVID. So a lot of times we were masked up when we weren't performing. And I still have the giant laminated COVID testing area sign with the barbarian. Actually, it was Brendar the Barbarian at that time it was named. They renamed it later, which we fought, but they're like, "You got to put your troll character in the title." I'm like, I don't. He doesn't need to be there. So anyway, but it was super fun. And I got to say, hats off to Nickelodeon. They made a fantastic, I think they caused to be made through me and Mike, of course, and all the very talented craftspeople and performers working on it. I'm really proud of that show. I think it's awesome. I hope everybody checks it out. It's available, I think, on iTunes and Amazon Plus. I think it's only $20 for the season. But it's really fun. And I got to play a lot of fun characters on it. I played the ghost man, Johnny Connoisseur, and I played the dragon. And Evan.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, absolutely. So can you share any projects you're currently working on?
What am I working on currently?
What you're allowed to talk about.
Yeah, I don't know how much I'm allowed to talk about. I am doing off and on, my friend Tom Stern, who directed for Crank Anchors, is doing a documentary on 80s punk band The Butthole Surfers. I think it's called something like The Whole Truth. Anyway, but it's going to be really cool. And he's doing puppet reenactments of some of their best bits. So I don't think he'll be mad at me for talking about that. I think he wants it popularized because it's going to be really cool and really fun.
Nice.
And he interviews a ton of the band members, and if you're at all interested in 80s 80s punk and nice. 90s, they're actually big in the 90s, maybe bigger. Well, so, yeah, so I'm working off and on that. Yeah.
Yes. Fun. Yeah. So, go ahead.
And then I'm just you know, pitching my own stuff here and there, and then I got some stuff I'm working on that I can't.
Hey, so to wrap this up, so this podcast is called Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show. When you think of nostalgia, what do you think of? Or in your own words, how would you define the word nostalgia?
My happy place? I don't know. I just, nostalgia is a big part of my life because I even now, I grew up on radio, so even now I listen avidly to ZBS Media, The Incredible Adventures of Jack Flanders. If you've never seen him, go to zbsmedia.org or zbs.org. I don't know. They're great. And then the original form of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is the radio show, can't beat it. It's phenomenal. I listen to that stuff constantly while I'm thinking and drawing and writing and even going to sleep. Like, it fuels me. That is nostalgia for me. Oh, and my buddy John just put up on the Plex server the Star Wars NPR show. So that's also lots of nostalgia.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Great word to end on. But Drew, thank you so much for taking the time to do this interview. This was a blast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys.
Yes, thank you very much, Drew, for being on.
I hope I've satisfied your nostalgia craving for...
Yes. Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes, and thank you so much, Drew, for being on. Thank you so much for what you've done, for your work, be a part of our lives. And keep up the great work. What are you doing now? I cannot wait. What's next in store for you?
Ah, thanks. Yeah, I'm curious to see what 2024 brings. It's going to be
fun.
Yeah,
absolutely. Us too, yes. Yes, well, enjoy the rest of your day, Drew. Keep in touch, and I'll let you know when this goes up.
All right. Thanks so much, Chris. All right.
Thank you.
See you guys.
See you, Drew. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
Bye. It's goodbye from us as well, everybody. We absolutely enjoyed our time speaking with Drew Massey. Keep on the lookout for more wonderful interviews coming your way. And as always, take us home, Jake. What do we say?
Keep nostalgia alive. Take care, everyone. See you next time. Bye. See
you. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to another wonderful Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show interview. Be sure to follow Jake and the crew on social media and stream the show wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And as always, remember to keep nostalgia alive. Bye-bye.